I'm Molly Kimball. Welcome to Fueled, a wellness and nutrition podcast. I'm a registered dietitian and nutrition journalist with a passion to help people live their strongest, healthiest life possible. In my weekly TV segments and columns, there's a limited amount of time and space to cover everything, but there's so much more to share. This podcast is my opportunity to dive deeper into the topics you want to know about. So this is exciting. It's my first podcast and first ever podcast. And to help me share a little bit about myself and my approach, my philosophy around wellness and nutrition, and basically just to give you an idea of who this is you're listening to, I've brought in my friend Hank to spend these first couple of podcasts with us. So he's known me for over a decade now. We've worked together weekly for my TV segments on WGNO, which is our ABC affiliate here in New Orleans. And basically he can help us make listening to this more interesting than just me talking about myself.
Molly, thanks for having me. This is exciting.
It is exciting.
Congratulations, first off.
Well, thank you.
Let me start there, your first podcast. I do want everybody to know that Molly is a wealth of knowledge. You have extensive knowledge and an extensive background, of course, in nutrition. And we will get into that here in the first couple of episodes, but I appreciate you having me sit in.
Well,
thank
you.
This is nice.
Yeah,
and by in, we mean your little kitchen nook here.
So. Right.
Coming to you live from Molly's house. But this is exciting, and I hope we can certainly get a lot of listeners for you because you have some great information. People love your TV segments, and hopefully, like you said, we can use this time to expand on some of those thoughts. Let me just start with this real quick, because in case somebody listens to the first 3 minutes of this and says, these people are horrible, we're not listening to any more of this. If you have one takeaway you would say off the bat that you want people to know about nutrition, or maybe one, you know, if you don't do anything else to make yourself healthier, do this. Is there one thing you would point to?
Well, I think the biggest thing is lighten up on ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, we overcomplicate it. We tell ourselves that it's a lot harder than it is. And so a lot of times it's that paralysis of perfection that we don't even get started in some really simple things that we can do because we've set ourselves up with these high expectations. So I think that's first and foremost is how can we make it easy on ourselves? How can we take that pressure off of ourselves and really make it a very approachable thing? You know, that wellness and nutrition doesn't have to be this, put a whole lot of time and thought and energy into it.
Yeah. Manageable goals.
Yes.
That we can get people. So that's what we'll be doing on these shows. And like I said, I'll be with Molly for the first couple here just to give you a little background on her. And let's start right there. I mean, you've been doing this a long time, of course. And so we'll start with where we are right now. Give us a little idea of what's going on. You've got the new podcast. You're very active here in the New Orleans area and in several different fields. So tell us what you're currently working on.
All right. So my full-time job, I am registered dietitian with Ochsner Fitness Center. So Ochsner is a large hospital system here in the Gulf South. Ochsner Fitness Center is separate. You walk in, you don't feel like you're in a hospital. It's just a giant, large fitness center, multiple locations. I started our nutrition program there in 1999 and kind of got it off the ground, have built it up. We have several dietitians there now who see clients, kind of that one-on-one, small group, family nutrition, all different types of specialties there, from food sensitivities to sports and performance and nutrition. And then kind of a spinoff from that client work, we do a lot of, you know, corporate nutrition, group nutrition talks, things like that. But we've also started Eat Fit. And Eat Fit started with Eat Fit NOLA. We work with restaurants, we work with markets, festivals, basically anywhere where food is sold. Our goal is to, how can we step in and take the guesswork out of making healthy things available? So we have Eat Fit on menus of hundreds of restaurants. And again, festivals, markets, from fine dining to festivals is kind of our way that we say it. And we have an app to guide people. So if they're dining at their local restaurant, they can pull out their app, see what's the nutrition facts of that, which you usually can't see. It's only chain restaurants. But we've actually expanded Eat Fit NOLA statewide. So we have Eat Fit BR, which is Baton Rouge, Eat Fit Acadiana, up to Eat Fit Shreveport. So across the state, we have dietitians in each region who do this. So that's been really cool. And then for about the past 10 years, you and I have done the ABC WGNO morning segment here. So a couple mornings a week talking of different nutrition topics. And in addition to that, I do a column each week for NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune, also kind of with that goal of just giving that nutrition education information.
Are you surprised at how well the Eat Fit program has been received, or maybe not how well, but maybe how quickly it spread, because you've only been doing this, what, 3 years now?
It's
three
been
or four?
Five now.
Five, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
it's
I can't keep track of it all, but I mean, it's really taken off.
It has. And I will say, yes, I'm surprised. And it's kind of one of those, if we can do it here in New Orleans, we can do it anywhere,
yeah.
Which is what's happening as we're going into these other areas of the state. I think a couple of years ago, maybe 10 years ago, we probably weren't ready for it. I think the same thing about the columns and the TV segments. You know, I've been doing those since about 2008 or nine. I think before that, the city wasn't ready for that, you know, but I think that, you know, had we tried it a decade prior, it just wasn't the right timing. So I think there's so much more awareness of wellness and nutrition, but also on that same token, there's also a lot of misinformation that comes out.
You mentioned being here in New Orleans, and of course, everybody knows it's you know, one of the food capitals of America, and people like to eat, and people like to eat unhealthy stuff a lot of times. Of course, Louisiana always seemingly at the bottom of the list in any sort of health measurement in the country here among all the states. You know, how challenging has that been, being in this city with people that love the food so much and so many different types of, I mean, let's be honest, heavy foods, there's fried foods going on. You mentioned the festivals, all that stuff. What has it been like to try to get this started here?
So with client work and then also with Eat Fit, it is a challenge, and it's especially the challenge here in New Orleans and because of just how we live our life. But, you know, that's not just New Orleans. I'll realize that that's so many places. Mm-hmm. Our social worlds is sort of centered on going out to eat. And it's, you know, we always say we're out at lunch and we're talking about what we're going to have for dinner. We're talking about where we're going this weekend. But food and drink just encompasses so much of what we do. And so one of the things that I've learned over the years is, how can we gently nudge, gently encourage without being finger wagging? And so that's kind of my goal, whether I'm working with clients one-on-one and having worked with thousands of people that are like you or me or professional athletes, or feedback that I've gotten from our readers and our viewers, is it helps me kind of learn about what drives us, what motivates us, what derails us from our best plans. And so those are things that being able to, you know, I feel that I'm very dialed into those things, and being able to kind of help share that on a broader spectrum is kind of my goal with all these things, because it is a lot of different pieces. You know, we have client work, we have the restaurant work, now a podcast, but all of these are ways that we can hopefully educate, inspire, and hopefully kind of motivate people to incorporate that change.
All right, we talk about inspiring other people, but obviously you had some inspiration at some point to get into this line of work that you do and this lifestyle that you lead. Where did all this come from?
So if I'm looking back, it's my dad. Just very, you know, that's a clear marker. So growing up, I grew up mostly with my dad. My parents split when I was younger. They always had an amicable, you know, friendship, mm-hmm. but my dad was the primary parent, which is unusual. And I'm 44 now. So when you're looking back in the 70s, that's an unusual thing for the dad to be a primary parent. So absolute tomboy. Actually, when we started doing the segments, you know, 10 years ago, I had to ask for help. How do I do my hair? How do I do my makeup?
Yeah.
Because I knew enough to get by just to be appropriate, but I didn't know enough of how to really do these things. Because again, growing up with just my dad, I didn't have that strong influence on fashion, hair, makeup. But what he did have that strong influence on is wellness. And so he, you know, back in the 70s, he drank skim milk when nobody did. He had the grape nuts when no one did. He started jogging back before they really had running shoes, and people were wondering, like, what are you doing? Like,
where's he going?
And why is he in such a hurry? Who's after him? And then, you know, we did things that were, you know, we went to a very conservative, you know, relatively conservative church.
Sure.
I mean, a lot of churches are just conservative. But we rode our bikes because he was just always looking at how can we be active. And nobody else at our church rode their bikes. They all had on suits, dresses, dress clothes. And here we show up, the Kimballs, with shorts, tennis shoes, sweaty, probably kind of stinky. And, you know, but that was just kind of, he layered in movement. He layered in activity. We would go on walks together. We had a lot of cats, and the neighborhood cats, they weren't neighborhood cats, they were ours, but they would follow us through the neighborhood on our walk together, you know. But everything that we did was, you know, centered on just time together, quality time, looking to how did he de-stress. He had a lot of stresses going on with work at that point, but when he came home, he was looking at how do we live our lives as healthily as possible, where when it comes to stress, it comes to nutrition, food, and also movement. So definitely a big influence.
Is this how you stay so young and vibrant looking at 44? Is it the nutrition or is it the lack of makeup? Or both?
It might be both. As soon as I'm done with anything where I have to have makeup, I'm definitely scrubbing right. it right off.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So, you know, we advanced past the childhood stage. You went to college. Tell me a little bit about that and, you know, what you studied and how that went.
Yeah, so actually going into college, I didn't know that nutrition was something you could go into as a profession. Right. I kind of went into a different field that was still really science heavy. But when I learned that, wow, I was so passionate about nutrition. It was kind of always been my hobby. It was what I would read just recreationally, you know, picking up magazines or books as I could educate myself through high school about it, and just always had a real strong interest. And so when I learned that this could actually be a career, I was like, well, this is just a natural fit. It's a very easy fit. So I switched my major, you know, went into nutrition. But at the time, a lot of nutrition professionals were in the hospital. And so I knew that I probably didn't want to do clinical nutrition work, but I knew that there was probably going to be something out there that would be an option besides that. So went to school, got my degree in nutrition. Along the way, I also took a few food science classes, and I really enjoyed that too, kind of learning about the composition of food, how different things interact, and creating new products, product development. And so I ended up getting a second degree in food science in addition to the nutrition degree. And that's really kind of helped in all ranges, because especially working with chefs and just having a deeper understanding about that side of it too. Through college, I, you know, worked at the Chimes, which is a bar, kind of a bar and restaurant, yeah, but heavily, you know, kind of the cool place that all of our friends would go work there on campus through college. That's actually where I met my husband. I wasn't working the night we met, but met him there. And
shout out to Brad.
And then also that was kind of the job that brought in the money, but the job that gave me the experience was at Pennington Biomedical Research Center. So it's a nationally recognized research center. And I had two different roles there. I started out in a genetics research lab, which I knew nothing about, but learned. And there was gene splicing. There was all types of things, studying the effects of certain fat genes and in mice and different diets that they were fed and how that affected weight and a whole host of other factors. So learned a lot there. And then I also worked in the food analysis lab. And that was also really interesting to see that when foods that are just out on the market are lab analyzed, what does all that look like on the back end? So it kind of started giving me that first taste into like real world, the science behind it, kind of the research behind it. So having that in tandem with getting the degrees in food science and nutrition, I think really all kind of played a role in giving me that strong background.
Yeah, the food science thing is really interesting to me. And obviously the theme of this show is Molly's a lot smarter than I am. But, you know, a lot of people can go read the label at the grocery store because they're there. A lot of people don't. Obviously, that's why we're doing this show. But the food science, you really have to have some intricate knowledge or background to really understand how this works. And I've really learned a lot from you in that aspect. Just, you know, an example of olive oil. You talk about how olive oil, if it gets to a certain temperature and starts, what is it, the smoke point, then it breaks down to produce chemical compounds that are then unhealthy for you.
Exactly.
Is that how it is? So,
yeah.
I mean, I've learned a lot from you in that aspect. And obviously that's something that you apply a lot with the Eat Fit program and making these meals and stuff.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you sometimes don't know how the information got in your head, but you're happy it's yeah. there. Right. But to Hank's point, you know, with olive oil, if our listeners are going, well, wait,
what?
Which olive oil?
Yeah.
Right. So there's extra virgin olive oil. If you're drizzling it, you're dipping it, you're going to have it kind of at low temperatures, or you're just, you know, having it to where you're really enjoying the flavor of it, spend the extra money, get that extra virgin olive oil, that stuff that's as dark and cloudy as possible, that's antioxidant rich, flavor rich. But if you're going to be bringing it to high temperatures, like in a skillet where you're going to be sauteing it, if it starts smoking, that means bad things are happening in that oil, and we don't want those things to go into our bodies. So, but if you use the light olive oil, it actually doesn't have nearly as many of those compounds that cause it to start smoking and change. So we can really bring that light olive oil to a higher temperature, which
it's yes. changed my daily routine, yes. because I'm the person in our household that cooks, you know, 95% of the meals and stuff. And I used to use regular olive oil, the darker stuff, as you're talking about, until you told me that. And I'm like, well, I don't want this. So now I buy light olive oil and cook with it
and
all the time.
And we're paying all this money for the stuff that's
yeah.
been so carefully cold pressed.
Right.
They're being so delicate with these oils. Then we throw them in this hot cast iron skillet. But yeah, that's actually a perfect example of some of the things that we'll talk about. And, mm-hmm. you know, like Greek yogurt, why we're the only ones, the U.S. calls it Greek and no one else does, and what that's all about. So there's all these little yeah. like random little tidbit facts that, yes, we'll be covering in episodes to come.
Yeah. And I don't don't want to get into a rabbit hole there because that was just
it could keep going.
Yeah, we could get into plenty of them just on olive oil alone, but that was something that you mentioned with the food science aspect that I thought is fascinating. And I mean, I imagine a lot of registered dietitians probably don't have that background. I mean, obviously that was a separate degree and a separate course that obviously you have, and I would think is more than most people, or at least a lot of people.
I think so that I was fortunate to have that formal education that kind of gave me that foundation and also to know where to look to continue to learn
to
more.
Apply it, yeah.
And I think it's just like any profession, though. We learn a bit in school. We learn a bit in these kind of post-college, you know, experiences like the requirements to become a registered dietitian. But that's a real finite, limited amount. And just like any profession, we have to kind of take it upon ourselves to continue to learn, research, educate ourselves. And I think things like the weekly newspaper column I do and the weekly TV segments that I'm doing with you guys, it's kept me every week. I'm having to research and find things that, right, like if I'm going to write about it, I need to make sure I know every aspect of it. And so that's kind of been just a built-in catalyst for that continued education.
That's a great point, because I haven't learned anything new in 10 years. It's no fun. Use your brains, kid.
You learned about olive oil,
or else you lose it. I learned about olive oil, but unfortunately I didn't achieve that on my own. So you have so much stuff going on with the Eat Fit, as you mentioned, your column, your TV shows. Now you're doing so much more with the Eat Fit. We're in carnival season here in New Orleans. You've got the King Cake. You've got other Eat Fit products. You're coming out with a cookbook.
Yeah.
Is that right? I mean,
fingers crossed.
I've never seen somebody with so many hats on their head at one time. I mean, do you ever say this is overwhelming, or you just...
Yes, I do. There's times where, you know, you know that there's a defined period of time that you're going to have this like higher than usual workload. Mm-hmm. And something like the King Cake, I mean, even if those of listeners who aren't from New Orleans know of King Cakes, and King Cake, of course, is sugar, water, flour. And we've worked with a local bakery to do this really delicious Eat Fit King Cake. It's kind of like pound cake meets king cake, but it's low carb, gluten free, all the things that the attributes that we would want, no sugar added, all natural, nothing artificial colors. But that's been something that when we see a void, then it's like my first thought is, well, what can we do to make this available? And so whether it's King Cake or whether it's other bakery items, other types of, we worked with a company locally to create an Eat Fit cheese sauce, nacho cheese sauce.
We have
Eat Fit in some schools. And so you put an Alfredo sauce on pasta or a cheese sauce on vegetables, kids are going to love it. So, you know, working to see like, okay, there isn't something like this that exists. How can we create it? That's been a really cool thing. But also something like the cookbook, it's a really great opportunity to have all these incredible restaurants and chefs that we've worked with to share these recipes for the home cook to do in their homes. And we've actually had the recipes all recipe tested by real people in real kitchens and their houses. And it's been cool to see these restaurant quality dishes on the photos in their phone that they're sending to me. It's been a neat thing. But so these are all things that to me, I find like so rewarding, and I love diving into them. Sometimes it does seem like they all hit at once, but to me, it's so much fun. I don't want to not do it. And most of them are, there's an end to it. You know, the cookbook, we're diving into it, and we'll have that into the printer, and, you know, fingers crossed, we'll have a cookbook by the end of the year. So,
and speaking of the cookbook, and there's a couple other topics I want to get to based on what you just said, but the cookbook, I mean, do you get annoyed when people say, oh, it's expensive to eat healthy and that sort of thing? I mean, I know I do. It's like if you have a family of three, you go to, say, McDonald's. I mean, you're paying $15. For probably your food, $10 or $15, when you go to the store to me and get chicken, a pack of veggies, and a couple of potatoes for $15 and eat much better. I mean, is the cookbook, is that sort of the goal here, to let people be able to, I guess, have a way easily to do it at home and just to, I guess, bring more people into cooking healthy for themselves?
Yes, it is. And I do think there are a lot of healthy foods that do cost a lot of money.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But I think that you can still eat really nutritiously without spending a lot of money. I think when we look at the things that jack up that price point, of course, is convenience, things that are the grab-and-go, prepackaged. A lot of those things that, yeah, we could do it, but are we really taking the time? So we'd rather just pay to have it done for us, you know?
Right.
So that, I absolutely think there's a higher price point on those things. The cookbook, it's been interesting because there are some of the recipes in there that are really, really cost effective. There's others that just that core ingredient in it is expensive. Lamb loin or duck.
Oh,
we don't have that many dishes in there. We have one duck recipe, one lamb recipe, but those ingredients, I didn't realize how much some of those actually cost at the store. So then you realize, wow, this is why these restaurants charge the prices they charge, you know? So that's been a big learning experience.
Stuff's expensive.
Yeah.
And you really have to focus on getting good stuff within your budget.
And with that being said, lamb loin doesn't necessarily, it's not in many of people's budgets, I've learned, but that's something that, you know, if you have that for your specialty thing, and then you have a lot of options for the others. And we made sure to include a lot of vegetarian or non-meat containing options that are right there. You know, when you're centering something on like beans or legumes, you immediately have a very cost-effective dish. Mm-hmm. So.
And that's going to be the name, Eat Fit Cookbook, or
working title?
Okay, yeah. Work in progress. Unlike this podcast, because we've already got a name for that. A couple of the things you just mentioned. You worked with a lot of schools, obviously, and something else I learned from you that I did not know is that there is a. Well, I want you to tell people, because again, if somebody's just listening to this podcast and doesn't know this, obviously, school nutrition has been a big topic over the past decade, as you mentioned, people just becoming more aware of healthy eating and stuff, but. For schools to feed kids healthy, talk about that price point and how that works. Because I was fascinated when you told me. It's really frustrating, actually, to know the information.
And it may vary some state to state or school to school. But we work with a food service company here in New Orleans that actually provides the schools meals. And they do turnkey service. So they provide the staffing, the food, all of this. So we've worked really closely with them to change a lot of their existing recipes or work with some of their existing products or simply bring in new ingredients that all fit that Eat Fit criteria in schools, which is, you know, no white refined flours, lower animal fats, very low or no added sugars. And I was shocked when we learned that for breakfast at schools, it's $1 that they're paid for this. And for their lunches, it's $3. So when we're looking at certain ingredients, you know, we can say all day long that, oh, well, they should, you know, quote, mm-hmm. should use these ingredients in schools. But when you look at what that reimbursable rate is, it just doesn't make sense for those food service companies to serve these things, because they would end up losing money. So that's been very eye-opening. But it's something that, again, kind of like anything, you get creative and you kind of start to think of other ways to make those foods work.
Yeah. Talk about your husband, who obviously is probably part guinea pig for all these recipes that you try, I think, and all these products that you bring home. I know he tries a bunch of stuff. And I always joke because, I mean, look, I'm a health monger a lot of times with food. I cook for my family. I have a 2-year-old, so I want her eating healthy. And I say, even I'm not to the level of Molly Kimball. I mean, you live it. And for folks listening to this podcast, it's not just something that she's putting out here and to do trying to make money. And the Eat Fit's a nonprofit organization. We got to mention this. So Molly really does care and really does do this out of love and out of a desire to teach people how to be healthier. But I always laugh because I think to myself, because you live what you preach, your husband, does he just go to work every day and eat a dozen donuts? It's like, is that Brad at his office just eating donuts all day just because he's like, this is out of control living with you? But talk about how his support and what he goes through on a daily basis eating all this stuff.
What he goes through.
Yeah.
So Brad is, you know him well, and he has a fantastic sense of humor.
Funny
he's
guy.
Very supportive. He's also, he has a lot of really great ideas. Eat Fit was his idea.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
He was like, we go to restaurants and people would say, oh, like, you're a nutritionist. And they would kind of judgingly say, like, what are you doing eating at this restaurant? Like, there's nothing healthy to eat here. Well, yeah, there is if you do XYZ. Or they would say, hey, I have high blood pressure. Or I have diabetes. What should I order here? So over the years, Brad's like, Molly, you should work with restaurants to put a healthy logo on the menu.
Wow.
And so then we started. So he calls it his best idea ever and his worst idea ever, because it's been, you know, it's a lot.
Well, I've always laughed and called the guy an instigator.
Right?
Most
yes.
of the time, not necessarily in a positive light, yes. but obviously this yes. was.
Yeah. So he's, his profession has nothing to do with nutrition,
right.
but he's very supportive of nutrition. And to the point, I don't think he's sneaking donuts. He does fess up if he has donuts at work.
Okay.
But if he has donuts at work, he's not sneaking them. He parades them around the office and he will tell people that I don't let him eat them. And so he's eating it and he's like, you know, just making a big production
yeah.
of it. But what's I think a cool thing is he, by way of being with me for the past 22 years now, has kind of learned that when he eats nutritiously and mm-hmm. makes these choices, like, he feels just solid.
Feels better, yeah.
And whenever he doesn't, he'll feel run down. A lot of times, he's one who tends to experience a very low blood sugar quickly, and he'll say, oh my gosh, like, I started seeing stars, or I started getting dizzy. And I'm like, well, you ate the cookies they gave you on the airplane, like for breakfast. Like, you know better than that. I don't feel sorry for you, yeah, you know? Right. And he'll say, oh, I felt so run down all day. Well, of course you did. And so he kind of he's experienced it. And so it's one of those where I don't feel like I have to nudge or prod or cajole, because he has firsthandedly like experienced that. Mm-hmm. And so he's an advocate for it himself.
I got you. And he's lived it. So he knows the effects of it and how much it can do for him.
And he's a real good everyday objective person. So whenever I run something by him, I kind of bounce it off of him. Very quickly, he'll say, that's a horrible idea. Mm-hmm. Or like if we're working on a new recipe, there's something I want to feature on our segment. He'll take one look at it and say, that's awful. Mm-hmm. You can't tell people to eat that. But then sometimes he tries it. Yeah, sometimes he tries it and goes, all right, that's good, you know, and then he's sold on it. But he'll also say, you need to point this out. So he's a real good kind of everyday bounce off ideas and gives great feedback.
All right, so we've gotten a little bit of your background there. And to come back around here, you mentioned it a little bit at the beginning when I said maybe what's the one thing you want people to hear. But expand on that a little bit, something that, you know, you go through the eFit, the TV, the columns, all this stuff. You know, what is the end goal here to bring to people, along with obviously you've got the quantifiable metrics of, you know, carbs and sugars and all that, but what is your end goal when you're working with your clients?
Again, taking some of that pressure off of ourselves and dialing into what motivates us and what helps us to incorporate that lasting change. And so we may be counting carbs, we might be looking at protein, or we might be giving up alcohol or whatever it is. But the key is to look at how do we do it in ways that are sustainable, ways that don't make us feel like we're turning our lives upside down. And one of the biggest things that I'll encourage people to do is not just look at what that end number is. You know, so if someone's goal is to lose weight or they're cutting out, whatever it is, we get caught up in what that scale says or whatever mm-hmm. that thing is that we're measuring. And so I'll encourage people to really tune in and look closely at that full body benefit that we're experiencing. So sugar or carbs, you know, I was joking about my husband with eating the cookies on the plane and then feeling rotten, but that's exactly what I'll encourage people to do. So look at how do these changes that I'm making to reach maybe this goal of weight loss, but how are they affecting me full body? I'm not as tired in the afternoon. At 3 o'clock, my energy's solid now. I don't want to crawl under my desk and take a nap, or I'm not ready to hit the office vending machine, or there's a lot of other things that we feel better. I'm sleeping better. I don't have to take the reflux medicine. My blood pressure is better. So there's a lot of these kind of side benefits when we start to improve our diet that, wow, it just makes life a lot easier. And so focusing on those things can really help us, our mood. Maybe we're not so short with people. We have better patience. All of these things can make it easier to stay focused if that number on the scale isn't moving as quickly as we think it should.
Yeah, and the term diet, I mean, scares a lot of people. Frankly, I hate it because people end up inevitably just not sticking with it.
You're on it or you're
right,
off it.
Exactly. So I hate that word. I mean, at the end of the day, the goal is to make an overall sustainable change that people can, not just, you know, for they got a wedding in 3 months, so they got to lose 5 pounds. But you want people to learn how to make a sustainable change that improves their life overall.
Exactly. And I think it's really easy to say it.
Yeah.
Oh, make these small changes, sustainable, lasting. But in order for it to be that way, we really have to start to look at what are all these other full body benefits. I can't tell you how many times I get, you know, the frustrated email, or, you know, someone stops in my office. They feel like they've been doing all the things right, but the scale's not changing. And then when you start to dig in a little bit, well, yeah, but my clothes are fitting better. Oh, yeah, no, I'm sleeping better. Oh, I don't have to, you know, I feel better. No, I've been working out really hard. My energy's so much better during my workouts. All these other mm-hmm. things that are pointing to you're doing the right thing, but just because that scale hasn't changed, they're about to throw in the towel. And so I think that's the biggest key I would say is, like, yes, that does matter, especially if overall we do have extra weight to lose. We do need to be aware of that, but really putting our day-to-day focus and kind of how are we measuring our success on these other things that are not just that number.
Yeah, absolutely. Coming up next episode, we're going to dig a little deeper into some of your theories here. What can we look forward to next week?
Yeah, next week we'll be diving deeper into my nutrition philosophy and more about my approach with clients, and then basically what we can do to help make wellness and nutrition as effortless but still as effective as possible.
All right, fantastic. Hope folks stick around. Join us for episode 2. Yeah,
thanks. Thanks, Hank, for helping me introduce as well.